It's 12:06. Welcome back to Open Air on the Rhythm and News Service of Jefferson Public Radio. We're also streaming live online at ijpr.org. I'm Eric Teal. We've got another great live session here for you today. Guitarist, vocalist Harry Manx is back, first time in a few years. It's great to have you here. He's playing tonight at 8 o'clock in Ashland at the Unitarian Fellowship as part of the St. Clair Productions concert season. StClairEvents.com is the website for information and tickets. The number is 541-535-3562. Harry, welcome back.
Thanks very much. It's a pleasure to be back here on this show and on this station. You've done wonderful things for the area. It's a pleasure.
It's good to see you again. You know, I was reminded as I was preparing for today, listening to some interviews that you had done, even with us a couple of years back, that you have one of the most complex accents of anyone I have ever met. You are one of not that many folks born on the Isle of Man.
Yes, that's true. Long time ago, a small island in the Irish Sea, the Isle of Man, and we lived there for a brief time, and then I immigrated to Canada and lived there quite, I don't know why it was freezing cold there, they went to Canada, but there we were. And, you know, my accent is probably a reflection of the years I spent going here and there, wandering around the planet, trying to gather some musical experience and enjoy myself along the way.
You know, there's now a campaign on to preserve some of the traditions of the Isle of Man, especially Manx Gaelic.
As
a language, is one of those that's just not being spoken much anymore.
No.
Have you spent any time going back? Is that, I mean, you left, what, you were six, somewhere around six?
No, I haven't been back there. You know, I know they have a blues festival. I've been invited to it, and I'll probably get there sooner or later. I have a relative still living there. My understanding was the last guy that spoke the Manx language died in the 70s, an older fellow. So it's kind of been lost, you know. But fortunately, they learned to speak English before that all passed away.
Now, you started off in music pretty early on as a teenager, but not necessarily playing music. You were involved as a sound guy, is that right?
Yeah, I used to work with bands in Toronto, and that was a real blessing because I ended up in a club where they had a lot of great blues, and I got to witness a lot of good blues players, and I toured around with some pretty decent bands, and it was a good introduction, you know, in my teenage years to the music industry.
Mm. It's Harry Manx, my guest live on Open Air here on the Rhythm and News Service of Jefferson Public Radio, playing an incredibly unusual and interesting instrument, which we'll talk about in a minute, but first let's hear it.
She smiled when I'm with the woe, that's where I belong. Now I'm running to her like a river rolling strong. Oh, she gave me love, oh, love, oh, love, yeah, yeah, now. Crazy love, she gave me love, oh, love, oh, love, yeah, yeah, now. Crazy love. Thank you.
good sense of humor when I'm feeling down. You know I'm running to her when the sun goes round. Take away my troubles, here she goes. Take away my grief. Take away my heartaches on a night like this. Yeah, she gave me love, oh love, oh love. Yeah, yeah, now. Crazy love, she gave me love, oh love, oh love. Yeah, yeah, now. Crazy love.
It's Harry Manx live on Open Air here on the Rhythm and News Service of Jefferson Public Radio, a version of Crazy Love. Harry, I know it's been a few years, but let's talk again about this instrument that you brought in and just showcased. It is called what?
It's known as the Mohan Veena, and it's from the family of veenas. In India, there's many kinds of veenas, and some say it's perhaps the oldest instrument in the world.
What does veena mean?
Well, it's the name of a stringed instrument that sometimes and quite often is you slide on it with a glass egg or a steel bar or something, but not always. Sometimes it's played with the fingers. Instead of the guitar, historically, they have the veena, and this one was created by a fellow in Rajasthan, Vishwa Mohan Bhatt, and what he did was he took a guitar, which had 6 strings, and he added another 14, so he made it 20 strings.
But they're not on different necks. It's sort of like one layer over the top of
the other? They run parallel, one layer under the other, and they're the lower level sounding like this. They're sympathetic strings. It means I don't play them, but if I play the top strings make the lower ones sing by themselves. And that's the wonderful thing about it. It's strung up like a sitar. At the end of the day, out of those 20 strings, I actually only play on the 3 major strings, just like the sitar.
And it looks like the 3 major strings are spaced a little bit further apart, so you can reach down through them?
Yes, that's right. I reach down through them to the lower level if I need to play them at all. It's an instrument that's sort of designed to play in a single key and in a modal kind of fashion, and it's meant for Indian classical music, essentially.
But blues works also,
well,
right?
if you stretch your mind wide enough, blues will fit in there, sure.
Yeah. So Vishwa Mohan Bhatt, not only the inventor of this instrument, but also your mentor for quite some time.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, I spent many years with Vishwa in Rajasthan studying his approach. He himself is a student of and disciple of Ravi Shankar, so he comes from that lineage. And he's a wonderful player. He has a great knowledge of ragas, which are Indian classical pieces. And I was fortunate to be with him.
So you started off in Canada.
Yes.
Why the decision to go to India? Was it an intent to learn about Indian music or the culture? Or
I was always fascinated with India. My father was in the British Navy, and he always used to send me things from India, bring back things from India. And, in the 60s and 70s, there was the hippie trail towards India. And everybody wanted to move in that direction. Suddenly, the Beatles and Ravi Shankar had opened up the idea that there was things in the East, a lot of magic and mystery. And a lot of people, young people, started to gravitate towards it. And I was caught up in that, too. And I went in the 70s. And it was a great learning and unlearning for all of us. And out of that, we got to know the music a bit. And I spent time around musicians. I started with the sitar, and then I eventually ended up with the Mohan Veena, and living about a block from my teacher's place in Jaipur in Rajasthan, and spent many years there. And then I came straight over here to Ashland to play for you folks.
Well, at first blush, the musical language is considerably different between Western music and Indian
yes.
music. Is there a different approach also to the study of music?
Yes. In India, they have a strong tradition of a master and disciple, master musician and his disciple. Now, what that means is the master, if he accepts you as a student, as a disciple, he expects great dedication, because he's going to take responsibility for your learning. He's going to get you from where you are to being a master if you pay attention. So it's quite a strong connection. And if you're fortunate enough to be part of that, it's a great learning too, because you end up studying a lot. My teacher expected me there every morning at 8 o'clock, and I'd stay till 1 without any lunch or whatever, just keep playing. And I loved it, that was a great challenge. And that went on many years. And when he asked you something, you would be feeling like it was your great honor to do it, to carry his guitar case mm-hmm. or whatever. It's a great exchange.
Had you started playing out publicly before the Indian influence worked its way into your music?
Yeah, I had been a one-man band for years in Europe. I didn't go straight from Canada to India. I was living in Europe for a dozen years. I had a drum on my back, and I was playing Bob Dylan, Bob Marley, Neil Young, everything. And I loved that kind of thing, the boom chicka with the guitar, and it was a real good money earner. I always made a good living with that. In fact, I took that over to Japan, and I did that over in Japan for many years. And from there, it was a short leap back to India. So that was my journey.
Yeah, you've kind of been everywhere.
Not quite, but it's like somebody said once, there's some places out there, they're not the end of the world, but you can see it from there.
a couple of years back, I remember you started to incorporate a Bruce Springsteen cover in your repertoire.
Yeah, that's right.
And I read a story of a show you gave where the boss was actually sitting in the front row. Tell me about that encounter.
Well, that was a tribute concert to Bruce Springsteen that was put on by the New York City Guitar Festival, and they like to get a variety of different guitarists to play a Springsteen song, and you never know what's going to go on there, and I was into my song, and I looked down, he was sitting in the front row. I suddenly felt like I might need to go to the bathroom. But I just shrugged it off, and so you do what you can in front of him with his lovely songs, and he came backstage, and he was a very cool guy and very relaxed, and he wanted to chat, and I was Bruced out of my mind.
Right on. Harry Manx is my guest live on Open Air here on the Rhythm and News Service of Jefferson Public Radio. Can we hear another song?
Yeah, let's play a little bit. I'll play something on the Mohan Veena then. Thank you.
put it on the track, run it till the Lord knows where. Oh Lord, me and I, oh Lord, my, run it till the Lord knows where. Yeah, now Bobcat says a hobo now. Oh man, give me some. Oh, I believe I'm sinking down. Oh Lord, me and oh Lord, my. Oh, I believe I'm sinking.
It's Harry Manx live on Open Air on Jefferson Public Radio's Rhythm and News Service. Harry, you said that you've got a new album coming out shortly, within the next couple of months.
That's
called
right.
Om Sweet Om.
Om Sweet Om, yes.
This is a bit of a convention for you of three-word titles for your albums.
There
are many of them. Where does that stem from?
Well, you know, the first one I did was Dog My Cat, which... You know, it's got a lot of attention. No one was really sure what it meant, me included. You know, folks would come up to me and swear they knew what it meant, and I just had fun with it. The next one was Wise and Otherwise, and that came to me in the middle of the night. You know, I'm available to these kind of crazy word plays, and I like them to have a little bit deeper meaning, if possible, and. I like to inject a little humor into the whole thing, if that's also possible.
So tell me about the new album. What's new about it?
Well, you know, I'm playing a lot of electric slide on this new album in a kind of Indian fashion. Hmm. When I play electric slide, it's more from the Bollywood approach. They use the instrument in Bollywood a lot, the electric slide, and it's well known. So I'm going to be having that on there, and I'm going to cover some interesting material. I'm going to have a version of Love Supreme from John Coltrane, and I wrote some words to it, you know, because it was originally instrumental and a modal piece, and Coltrane was inspired very much by Indian music at the time that he wrote that. He lifted the melody from a South Indian raga, and he was a great friend of Ravi Shankar. So, I felt a sort of an affinity with that tune, and I added my own little raga injected into the song. So that'll be coming along pretty soon.
And that's due in January, sometime
after
the new
year? I'll get you something to listen to soon enough.
And a good place to start is, I guess, what would be considered your most recent release, which is a best-of collection.
Yes.
Called Isle of Manx.
Isle of Manx, yeah. That was the last one we put out, and that was my... Well, that was my 10th CD in 10 years, and I kind of thought, well, grab a few tunes from each and every one and put them all together.
10 CDs in 10 years, but you started late.
I did. My first one came out when I was 46. You know, you don't want to rush into these things, man.
But now you got to get it all out, right?
Well, you open those floodgates. You know, I don't know, maybe other artists experience it too, but I always felt that I didn't have much to say. And I was waiting, you know, for divine inspiration. But, you know, you might wait a long time, and I realized that at some point you have to begin. And whether you're able to use words or not, you begin the journey, and hopefully along the way you will be able to.
Yeah. Now that you've been back in the West for some time, do you find the Indian influence in your playing starting to fade just a little bit?
Well, it becomes another one of the influences, I guess, on my playing in general. You know, like most of my blues sounds a little Indian, and it just became part of the playing. But I'm not studying ragas these days. I have a book of ragas that I learned over the years, and originally they were written in Sanskrit, and we put them into an English kind of way to read them. And I still refer to them when I'm looking for inspiration or new melodies and stuff like that.
I would imagine the sound of the veena keeps that fairly fresh.
Yeah, that's right. And you know, I'm still exploring that music, but not in a formal study fashion like I did before.
I've seen some videos of you online at performances where you seem to have a pretty active role in running sound for your own show. You know, it's sort of right next to you. And I remember, you know, from your early days working as a sound technician.
Yeah.
Is that a hard thing to let go of?
Well, you know, I think that all of us musicians benefit from providing the house sound guys the best quality sound we can, you know. And to that end, I get involved in using preamps and very nice effects and cleaning up the signal, giving the sound man the best signal I can give him. And I try to fill the room with my guitar, so I don't want to just give him the guitar without anything and hope for the best. I try to make it easy on him.
And you're on the road a lot, it seems. Does the family go with you these days?
No, you know, that's it might be nice for me, but I'm not sure it'd be nice for them. You know, the road has its own challenges, and you know, families like to stay still. Yeah, I was down in Berkeley last night. That was great. Or was it the night before? I think the night before.
You've been on the road a lot.
I've been
on
the road. It's all good.
If you can't tell the difference. The new album coming out in just a couple of months is called Om Sweet Om. Harry Manx is my guest. The show is tonight at 8 o'clock at the Ashland Unitarian Fellowship. StClairEvents.com for information and tickets. The number 541-535-3562 if you'd rather speak to somebody. We have time for one more, Harry?
Yeah. Thank you.
cut you down now, oh, so soon. You were a flower, what make death come? Yeah, cut you down now, oh, so soon. Oh, child. Death be easy, no, death be easy. Oh, death, pass me over, well. Another year, another year, another year.
It's Harry Manx live on Open Air here on Jefferson Public Radio's Rhythm and News Service. The most recent collection is a best of. It's called Isle of Manx. The new album, Om Sweet Om, due out in just a couple of months. Harry, it's been so nice to see you again. Thanks so much.
Thanks very much, Eric. A wonderful show. Thanks for having me on.